Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show. This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll talk fantasy football and preview week six of the NFL season with Paul Charchian coming up a little bit later on. In the meantime, speaking of the NFL, what could change between now and the end of the NFL season when it comes to the standings? And coming up a little bit later, who's under the most pressure in college football the rest of this season? Get to that as well. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. The podcasts are also available online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page or through our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. And not only can you listen to the show live from anywhere in the world through that app, but also on demand. The podcasts are available there. And I believe when you download that app, you have a chance to get yourself an Echo. Give away an Echo from time to time. So go get that app today. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. You can always tweet the show as well, at Morrow Middays. Last hour, we were talking about the 3-2 teams who are all in the same boat. There's three of them. They started 3-0, then they lost their next two games to get to 3-2. Which one do you trust to turn things around? The Raiders, Broncos, or Panthers? I think it's the Panthers. I think the Panthers are the better team, more well-rounded team of the three, and probably in the easier division. We'll wait to see what we truly get from the Saints as the year moves forward. But once they get Christian McCaffrey back, I do like this Panthers team still. Whereas the Broncos, I don't trust Teddy Bridgewater enough. And the Raiders, I had them in last place to begin the year. They've been much better than anticipated, but now you throw in the whole John Gruden situation. So I had wondered out loud on air, well, has there ever been an interim coach that took over and led that team to the playoff? Because I could not remember one. And I said, you know, you can let me know because I'm sure I'm missing somebody. Well, Sean on Twitter said, what about Bruce Arians when he had to fill in for Chuck Pagano with the Colts? Now, that's a good one that I did not think. I would figure there's probably an obvious one I'm missing. But with Bruce Arians, it's a little tricky. He did take over filling in for Pagano. Yes, he was an interim coach, but it wasn't because of a firing. Still the same idea, right? We're kind of splitting hairs here at semantics. The idea being it's difficult when the head coach leaves and somebody else takes over midseason. And it's like, oh, who's the new guy? It was a little bit easier then because it was already Bruce Arians' offense, and so he didn't have to change anything offensively. The only change was like the, you know, the game management stuff. Pagano was a defensive guy, but I don't think he was calling the defense at the time. Whereas now for the Raiders, like, that's Gruden's offense. So you lose your head coach and you lose your offensive coordinator in the process. Additionally, Arians did set the record for most wins as an interim coach with 9. He did really well that year. It helped get him a head coaching job the next year with the Cardinals. It was the reason why he got the head coaching job in Arizona. Became a first-time head coach in the NFL officially the next year. But here's why I say it's a little tricky. It was because Pagano came back and coached in the playoffs. So, yes, Arians did get them there. That counts. I mean, that's enough. Pagano came back, I think, the final week of the season, if I remember correctly, and then coached the playoff game as well. So it's a little different. But same idea, same premise. So we can count that one. All right, Bruce Arians, I think, is the only one. Otherwise, I was looking it up. I haven't found another case in which an interim coach led their team to the postseason. But we can say Arians did. He took over a team and went 9-3, and then Pagano came back and finished off the regular season with Arians returning to offensive coordinator than coach the playoffs. Different scenario, of course, because you know your head coach is going to come back at some point. He's just filling in. Pagano probably still had something to do with the team during that year. I mean, he was off handling his cancer diagnosis. That's a lot more serious. But I'm sure still had some involvement with the team. Where here, it's a completely clean break. Gruden's gone, has nothing to do with this team anymore. And now, right, it's a new guy running the show, and they have to do things how he sees fit. So a little bit different, but Arians still a tough situation to step in, have a new coach like that, and still go out there and win. And the Colts did. And they did it with Andrew Luck as a rookie. So you factor that in as well, right? Andrew Luck, your rookie year, your coach has to leave for most of the season with cancer. You have Bruce Arians take over. Then your head coach comes back. You're a rookie. The team won two games the year before. He still got them to the playoffs. Well, impressive year for the Colts. That may be the only case in which an interim coach stepped in and helped that team still get to the playoffs. I don't think it'll happen for the Raiders this year. I think this is kind of the start of the downfall in Las Vegas. A lot of noise right now. You lose your offensive coordinator. Look, when they were 3-0, they had the number one offense in the league. That was John Gruden's offense. He's now gone. Greg Olsen will call the plays, not Greg Olsen from the Panthers, but a different one, who's been a longtime offensive coordinator and never really did much. He'll call the plays, and we'll see how things go for the Raiders. They'll have a first-time head coach now filling in. I think this is going to start a tough stretch here for the Raiders the rest of the season. But when you look at the NFL, we are now 5 weeks in. Week six begins tonight with, I think, a sneaky good Thursday night football game tonight with the Buccaneers on the road against Philadelphia. And we'll get to that a little bit later on this afternoon. I'll give you my official pick, as I do for every primetime game. But there's one theory I've had about Brady, and it could come into play again tonight. We'll get to that later on this afternoon. Call that a tease. But when you look at the NFL 5 weeks in, again, this is about a third of the way through the season. Can we believe what we have seen so far, or should we expect some changes? Look at the AFC. The Bills are in first. The Patriots are in second. That's how I predicted it in the offseason, at the start of the season. So I wouldn't change much. That division has shaped up pretty much as I expected. The Dolphins are a little worse than I thought. The Patriots are not quite as good as I thought they would be at this point either. But New England still has a positive point differential. They've had some close losses. Belichick's teams always get better. I think the AFC East remains exactly the same. The Bills, Patriots, Dolphins, Jets in that order. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Dolphins, if the wheels really come off with the way that season has gone so far, and they have a lousy season, and the Jets win a couple of games and even pass them in the standings. That's the one thing that may change for me. Otherwise, I think it remains exactly the same. I think the Patriots start to play better. I think the Dolphins do get some more wins, but I think it goes Bills, Patriots, Dolphins, Jets the rest of the way. In the AFC North, right now the Ravens are in first, the Bengals in second, Browns and Steelers. Turned somewhat upside down. I had the Bengals in last place. I had the Browns winning the division. Now, the Browns are only one game out of first. That division's still very much wide open. In fact, the Steelers are right there at 2-3. They're only two games behind the first-place Ravens. It's a tight division, and I think it'll continue to be so the rest of the year. But as I've been saying the last 24 hours, the Bengals, while they are better than I thought they'd be, while they have surprised me, I don't think they'll be there in the end. The Ravens, sure, I could see them winning the division. I think the Browns will be the second-best team in that division. I think the Bengals and the Steelers miss the playoffs. So a little bit of a change, I think, will be coming to the AFC North. The Ravens and the Browns, I believe, will be the top two teams, and at this point, they're almost interchangeable to me on who wins that division. I have concerns about each. In the AFC South, I really whiffed on the Jacksonville Jaguars. I was very optimistic on the Jaguars. It was probably one of the worst takes I've had in quite some time. There are certain things I remember from my career that are just terrible takes. You could put them on whatever that Twitter account is, cold, freezing takes, whatever it is, freezing cold takes. I remember going way back, this is going back about 12 years now, when I said Joe Girardi will never win a World Series with the Yankees. And then he won a World Series that year, that very year. I said that during the season. I said, Joe Girardi's never going to win a World Series. And then, like, fast forward 4 months, and they won the World Series. And I thought, well, that was a terrible take, because not only did I get it wrong, but I got it wrong very quickly. Like, it happened that very season. I said he would never win one. Not only did he win one, but it happened that year as soon as I said it. Now, in my defense, he won a World Series since, and the Yankees got rid of him without another World Series victory, so I was close. What I meant to say was starting next year, he'll never win a World Series. But that's one that always stands out to me. That was just a terrible take that I've had. This is another one. This goes right up there with the Girardi take, that the Jaguars, I thought, were actually going to have a good year. I put them in second place in the division. I thought they'd be around 500. they'll be lucky to win a game at this point. They're a lousy team. But when you look at that division, the Titans are in first, followed by the Texans, Colts, Jaguars right now. The Jags and the Texans, I think, are still the two worst teams. The Colts are 1-4, but they've had some bad luck. They've had some injuries, and you go back to that Monday night game, if Lamar Jackson doesn't pull off that great comeback, or if Blankenship doesn't miss that kick for the Colts, I think we're talking more this week about Carson Wentz than Lamar Jackson, because Wentz played maybe the best game of his career on Monday and still lost. So the Colts, they have the potential to certainly win some more games. Where it will become interesting is that with this trade for Carson Wentz, the stipulation was if he plays 70% of the snaps this year, then the Colts have to give away their first-round pick. If their season is lost and Wentz is close to that 70% marker, do they just bench him at the end of the year, almost as a form of tanking so they could keep their first-rounder? That's the storyline to watch with the Colts. They probably thought that would never become an issue because we're going to be a playoff team. Of course we're going to want Wentz to play. And then we'll give up that number one pick because he'll be in the 20s. Now the Colts are 1-4 right now. They'd be picking like in the top 10. You don't want to give up that pick. At a certain point, if the Colts don't turn it around, they're probably going to bench Wentz at the end of the year, which could lead to them losing more games. So that division is very poor. I think the Titans do win that division and probably only with 9 wins this year. I do think the Colts play better football and finish in second place, even with that Wentz storyline. And then the Texans and the Jaguars are at the bottom of the division. So the only change I see, the Colts starting to play a little bit better, and the Texans and the Jags continue to struggle. That will remain the same. In the AFC West, the Chiefs, right? You can't keep a good man down, as they say. I don't think the Chiefs are going to be in the last place for the rest of the season. I don't think they'll continue to struggle as much as they have. I'll put the Chiefs in second. I think this is now the Chargers division. I like the Chargers in the season. I picked the Chargers to be a playoff team at the start of the year. I gave them double-digit victories, and they've looked probably even better than I anticipated. I think the Chargers hold on and win the AFC West, but the Chiefs will finish in second. They'll be better. I think the Raiders start to slide, and the Broncos will kind of hold firm. They're around 500. I had the Raiders in last place and the Broncos in third at the start of the season. I think those will remain the same. All I would do is now swap the Chargers, winning that division instead of the Chiefs. But as we currently look at the standings, what changes are going to come to the AFC West by year's end? The Chiefs will climb up that standings board to second place. The Raiders will fall into last. In the NFC, I've changed my opinion on the NFC East. I thought the Giants would win that division this year. In their defense, they've had a bunch of injuries and some bad breaks. They've lost some close games, but they're 1-4, now banged up, can't count on them. Meanwhile, the Cowboys look like the clear best team in that division. When I look at the NFC East, right now it's stacked up. Dallas, Washington, Philadelphia, New York. The only change I'll make by year's end, I think Philadelphia passes Washington. I was off on Philadelphia. I thought they were a last-place team and one of the worst teams in the league. But they're competitive. They play hard. In fact, they've been more competitive than Washington has this year, and they have a more dynamic quarterback. So I think the Eagles finish in second, and the Washington football team will finish in third. The Eagles' defense has been much better than the Washington football team's. Their quarterback is more of a playmaker. That's the only change I see the rest of the way, and I think the Giants continue to struggle and then have to make a decision about even their head coach. In the NFC North, right now it's Packers, Bears, Vikings, Lions. Just swap the Vikings and the Bears. The Vikings are better than the record indicates. The Bears are not quite as good as their record indicates. In fact, the Vikings are a +4 point differential despite having a losing record. The Bears are -16 in point differential despite having a winning record. Tells you all you need to know. The Vikings have played better than the Bears this year. They're just one game behind Chicago. I think the Packers win that division, just as I thought in the offseason, and then it'll be Vikings, Chicago, Detroit, just as I thought. In the NFC South, I think things stay exactly the same. It's how I predicted in the offseason. Buccaneers, Panthers, Saints, Falcons, in that order. And in the NFC West, even though the Cardinals are the last undefeated team, I think the Rams will overtake them. The Rams are just, I know they lost, but the Rams are the more talented team. They're the better team. I trust their head coach more. I trust their quarterback more at this point. I know Stafford has never won a big game, but either has Kyler Murray, and he's younger than Stafford. I've laid out my concerns for the Cardinals. I don't know how long they can sustain this. I don't know how well they can play when it comes to become a more physical game in December. I think they could slip up along the way. Cliff Kingsbury, I could see him getting outcoached in a big spot where I trust McVay a little bit more. I trust all the other coaches in that division a little bit more. I think the Rams still win that division. I think the Seahawks finish in last place. I think the Niners will be better. The standings right now, Arizona, L.A., Seattle, San Francisco. I would swap L.A. and Arizona, and I would swap San Francisco and Seattle by year's end. And those are the changes that I think are still on the way in the NFL. But when I look at division leaders, I think the Bills will remain in first. The Titans will remain in first. I do trust the Chargers, as well as the Cowboys, Packers, Bucks. The only two changes I could see are the two toughest divisions in football. So I'm not really going out on a limb here. But in the AFC North, the Ravens are in first place right now. I still think I may roll with the Browns. And in the NFC West, the Cardinals are in first place, but I still trust the Rams more in that division. Coming up, the oldest person ever just went into space. I guess I should rephrase that. Not the oldest person ever, but instead, we just had the oldest person to go to space, if you get what I'm saying. Not the oldest person in the world who then we sent them to space, but of all the people that have gone into space, the oldest just went. We'll get to that next. Plus, Paul Charchin will join us in about 10 minutes. We'll talk fantasy football and get ready for week 6 of the NFL season. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll catch up with Paul Charchi in about 8 minutes to talk fantasy football and get ready for week 6 of the NFL season, which begins tonight, Eagles-Buccaneers. You have Eagles-Buccaneers tonight, and you have Game 5, Dodgers-Giants. And if you are a Braves fan, and of course you want to see who you're playing on Saturday, do a little scouting report. So that game is very much of interest tonight. We covered that yesterday in the show. You can find on demand, who would you rather face if you're the Braves, the Dodgers or the Giants? If I'm a Braves fan, I think I'm pulling for San Francisco tonight. We'll see what happens in that game. Should be a lot of fun. Two best teams in baseball in a winner-take-all situation. Should be a great atmosphere at San Fran's ballpark, whatever they call it these days. Used to be Pac Bell. Whatever they call it, it'll be a lot of fun tonight. And two good games, I think. I think Thursday Night Football will be very interesting. More on that later on. We mentioned this when this became a story a couple of weeks ago. Then it actually happened this week. I had no idea it was happening this quickly, but William Shatner went to space. 90, he became the oldest person to travel space at 90 years old. William Shatner went up with Bezos. He did an interview for the Today Show, and he said that the simulations that they put him through in preparation for this was nothing like the actual experience. He said it did not get him prepared whatsoever. He went on to say, you know, it's indescribable, the experience, the weightlessness that you have. It was something like, of course, you never experienced before. And then he says, your body doesn't have any pressure, so suddenly your body is expanding. You're floating. I don't want to do somersaults. I don't want to throw any Skittles. I just wanted to look out the window, is what William Shatner said. And he said, the skin is going back as you hit 5Gs, and you're wondering, can I endure this? When will this end? It doesn't sound like a very pleasant experience that he explained. Plus, at 90 years old, let's be frank here, right? That's the skin he talks about. He may have some extra that's pulling back on him, that's flapping back. Although, I don't know. You know, the Hollywood types, they always get things done, so Shatner, maybe he's had this thing tightened up over the years. He looks really good for 90, by the way. Shatner looks really good. And that's the thing he said. He said he finally felt his age. He said going into that, he thought, you know, even though he's 90 years old, he thought like, oh, yeah, you know, I could handle this. Even though, you know, age is just a number. It's however you feel. But he said, when I got into this flight, when we went to space, the quote, he said, oh, yeah, no, I'm 90 years old. He said, I'm thinking, you know something, I am 90 years old. After that experience. So he certainly realized that. By the way, he said he rides horses still. I think that's a little, a 90-year-old getting up on horses, I think that's a little risky, but we did just put him in space. So Shatner, oldest guy to go into space.
And you have to remember, he was Captain Kirk.
That's right.
And he was also in Airplane 2, the sequel.
Was he? I've never seen that one. Now, was that your Shatner impersonation? Is that what we're getting there?
Kind of using some of his speech patterns as uh-huh. Captain Kirk. He was actually the, I guess, the director of the lunar airport in Airplane 2, the sequel.
Okay. Yeah, I've never seen – I love the original. I've never seen the sequel. If there was ever a celebrity, especially like an older celebrity to put into space, yeah, for those reasons, I think it would have to be William Shatner. 90 years old, looks pretty good. And George Takei, is that how he says his name? Him and Shatner don't get along. He was giving Shatner a hard time. He was calling him a unfit guinea pig for this whole experience. He wasn't very happy. At this point, we're going to have to put the whole cast of Star Trek. They're all after going to go up, and then eventually you have to put like the cast of Star Wars, send them to space as well, just because. But George Takei sounds a little jealous making these comments about William Shatner. 90-year-old, I don't know if I go into space today. Although 90 years old, it's the opposite. At that point, you've lived a full life. You're willing to take sort of chances, I suppose, to pull off something like that. But 90-year-old makes it oldest person ever go into space. William Shatner. How about that? Never was a Star Trek guy. I don't know. They have not confirmed the reports that they acted out scenes of Star Trek on the flight. So, 843-721-9500. Super Dave is with us. Dave, what's going on? How are you?
Well, I had news for you. Kirk was always in space.
Yeah.
Where no man has gone before.
Well, now he really has, so good for him.
He's got the money he's got, and he would be too. There's more you could, better things you could do with it, you know, but...
Now, you are of the school of thought that he didn't technically go into space, right? Weren't you the one that said you have to leave planet Earth? You have to go out into... is that Jerome? Super Dave?
Yeah, that was Jerome.
So, Super Dave was pro? Jerome. So
yeah,
you're pro.
Super Dave seemed to be cool with it.
Okay, so you're cool with this. This counts as going to space?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, all right. Would you do this? Would you get on?
Let's say I'm more open-minded, you know?
Uh-huh. Would you get on a plane like this? Would you do a trip like this and go to space?
Yeah, if somebody gave me the money, I'd do it.
All right. So we have to get a GoFundMe going for your wrestling match with Bobby.
Good luck for that one.
And well, now we're going to get a second one together to send you to space.
Well, good luck with both.
Okay. Well,
I heard that was pretty expensive to go into space.
Oh, I'm sure it's not that bad to go into space.
Now, there will be a difference between Super Dave's ticket to space and Jerome's. Super Dave's will be round trip.
Ouch. Sending Jerome off to space. Super Dave, we will get the GoFundMes up and running. We'll have a wrestling match with Bobby, and then we'll do the wrestling match in space on the flight, much like didn't they send Jason Voorhees to space in one of those ridiculous movies? Same thing here. We're going to send Super Dave to space. We're going to bring the fight to space, wrestling match.
James Bond went to space.
Oh, there you go.
Moonraker. Of course, that was made in the late 70s during the whole late 70s, early 80s sci-fi craze.
Yeah,
so that was a way to cash in on it.
Well, congrats to Shatner. We'll see who the next celebrity is to go up there in space. Ashton Kutcher was supposed to be one, and then his wife told him, you got kids. You're not going to this. He sold his ticket. He was supposed to be on this list as well.
So he can not go to space, but he's allowed to not shower, huh?
Yeah, that's right. He's more willing to go to space than to get into the shower. He's more willing to take a trip to space than take a trip to the bathroom to bathe himself. We'll talk fantasy football and get ready for week 6 when we come back with Paul Charchian. It's the Moore Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
It's Throwback Thursday.
What's today?
It's Thursday.
Really? Feels like Tuesday.
Tuesday has no feel. Monday has a feel. Friday has a feel. Sunday has a feel.
I feel Tuesday and Wednesday.
All right, shut up, the both of you.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
People say I'm the life of the party, 'cause I tell a joke or two. Although I may be laughing loud and hearty, deep inside I'm blue.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Week 6 of the NFL season begins tonight. Eagles, Buccaneers. And to help you get ready for this weekend of football and to help you set your fantasy lineup as well, he joins us at this time every Thursday. It's Paul Charchian on Twitter, at Paul Charchian, owner of GuillotineLeagues.com. Find his free player rankings there. Join a league today, GuillotineLeagues.com, as he's here to help you with your fantasy lineup. Paul, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great, Luke. I wish you were still alive in our fantasy
league. Oh, my goodness. What a bad beat. If there is such a bad beat, Dalvin Cook and Calvin Ridley both out for me, and I lost by like 3 points on Monday Night Football.
brutal. Brutal. I'm really sorry you got chopped, Luke. But on behalf of everybody who got Calvin Ridley and Dalvin Cook, I want to thank you for that because you know we got to bid on all your great players, which was terrific.
Yeah, I liked my roster too, but I had a terrible week, and that's the thing with the guillotine. You have one bad week, you have one big injury, it costs you, and that was the case there. So unfortunately,
yeah, it's tough. That yeah. part is tough. There's a certain amount of luck involved, but you know, hopefully your team is good enough you can absorb a bad week or you know a bad player or a player who's out or one injury. But when they stack up, that's when it gets tricky.
Yeah,
I think that's what got you.
Yeah, unfortunately. So it was certainly a fun time. Check out GuillotineLeagues.com. It is a blast. We've been talking it up throughout the year, and it's a lot of fun. Check it out if you haven't tried it yet. GuillotineLeagues.com. Let's talk about this game tonight as we look in at Week 6. Eagles, Buccaneers, I think just from a football perspective, I think it could be a sneaky good game tonight. From a fantasy perspective, let's start, I guess, on the Eagles side. How do you like these matchups tonight for the Eagles against the Bucs?
I love the passing matchups, and here's why. Nobody can run on the Bucs. So usually the way it works is some team comes in, they're trying to play against the Bucs' elite run defense, and they squander away like the first third of the game trying to run and establish a run, and it never works, and then they just pass for the rest of the game, which is why opponents are passing 45 times per game against Tampa, the league high, by a mile. But what's beautiful about this for the Eagles is they don't try to run the ball anyway. Their running backs have run 8 times per game over the last 3 weeks. That's it, 8. And so they don't even try. So they don't have to even change anything to go attack the Bucs where they're weakest, and that's in their secondary. No Antoine Winfield, no Carlton Davis, no Sean Murphy Bunting. They're missing 3 starters out of their secondary. Bucs are allowing the 3rd most passing yards, the 2nd most passing touchdowns. That's going to be green light for Jalen Hurts and especially Devonta Smith, averaging almost 15 yards per attempt. I think the downfield passing is going to connect here from Hurts, which it doesn't always do. He's not a naturally gifted deep ball passer, but it's going to come together here. And then spy linebacker Levante David also out. That could trigger some running lane options for Hurts as well. So not only Hurts is sitting on a massive fantasy game, the likes of which we haven't seen yet. You know, when those rushing quarterbacks also pass and, you know, the whole thing goes, your scoring system goes on tilt, that's what Hurts could be sitting on in this game. And I'm really excited for the passing attack of the Eagles.
On the flip side, this Eagles defense has allowed big games to Prescott, Mahomes, those offenses. So now they get Brady tonight in the Buccaneers. How do you like the matchup for Tampa Bay against this Eagles defense?
Well, I do like it a lot, as you can imagine. And the Eagles pass defense, and you identified it correctly, against good quarterbacks, they've totally wilted. Bad quarterbacks they can handle. And obviously Brady's a good quarterback, and he's got the 3 great receivers, Evans, Brown, Godwin. They match up favorably over Slay, Nelson, and Maddox, and it's going to be game on. I think this thing is just going to be a shootout back and forth. You mentioned Prescott and Mahomes combined for 8 touchdowns against these Eagles, and you know I could see another like 4 touchdown game coming for Tom Brady here. So yeah, like him and all of his receivers quite a bit. Doesn't matter that Gronk's gonna play, or well, he's not. Doesn't matter that Gronk's not going to play in this one. So, by the way, I should mention, if you need a tight end, and a lot of our listeners do, Zach Ertz tonight with Dallas Goedert out is a really nice, sneaky play.
Well, that answers my next question. I was going to ask you that kind of selfishly because my tight ends have been lackluster. So Zach Ertz is a guy to go out and try to find there for the tight end position.
I'll give you another one, too. Yeah. If not Zach Ertz, because he's not widely owned. He's owned like half of fantasy leagues. The guy you can go pick up right now, and he's my number 11 tight end this week, Ricky Seals-Jones is the tight end who's filling in for Logan Thomas in Washington. And get this. He was on the field for 99% of the snaps last week, and they threw to him 8 times. So they don't change anything. And here comes Kansas City. This is the worst defense in the league by a margin. By the way, can we just talk about that?
Yeah.
How bad Kansas City? Here's how bad this defense is. They rank dead last in points allowed. They're 2nd to last in yards allowed. They rank 29th in passing yards allowed, 29th in rushing yards allowed. They rank dead last in quarterback rushing yards allowed, dead last in quarterback rushing touchdowns allowed, and dead last in first downs. That's what's coming for Taylor Heinicke, my favorite sleeper quarterback for this week. And for anybody who's now in the bye weeks, you're in a pinch receiver. We know Terry McLaurin's sitting on a gigantic game, but who else could Taylor Heinicke throw to? Can't be Logan Thomas. He's on IR. Already mentioned Ricky Seals-Jones is a guy you could go to. Curtis Samuel re-injured himself. Dyami Brown's out. Adam Humphries. Sneaky play from the slot against the very burnable Legarius Sneed, who is allowing an opposing passer rating of an almost perfect 152. Jeez. He's given up 3 touchdowns in the past 2 games. Adam Humphries, sneaky pickup and play this week.
Yeah, that's a good one. Watch out for Washington football. Anybody going up against that defense these days for Kansas City. I was going to ask you about the Washington football team, but specifically their backfield, where we got this news about Antonio Gibson with some sort of stress fracture. And, you know, J.D. McKissick has had some boom or bust things this year. Just that Washington football backfield, the last week or the news the last week, does it change anything how you look at that backfield?
Well, I was worried going into last week that this was going to be a real problem with Antonio Gibson running on a stress fracture. Sounds bad. But then he went and scored 2 touchdowns against a great run defense. So apparently it doesn't necessarily bother him that much. And now he gets to go up in a far easier matchup against Kansas City. So I've got an A grade on him. But I also like J.D. McKissick because there's a good chance the Chiefs get ahead at some point, and maybe for all of this game. And if you and when we see J.D. McKissick get on the field is during blowouts and when this team's behind by a lot. And that's when they yank Antonio Gibson and they put in McKissick. And if you think the Chiefs are going to play from ahead, I think you start McKissick here as well.
Let me ask you some other things. Talk with Paul Charchian here on Twitter at Paul Charchian. Check out GuillotineLeagues.com. Let's bounce around a little bit. The Steelers, Ben Roethlisberger, woke up this past Sunday, and the Steelers scored some points. Now, Juju Smith-Schuster, I know, is out for the year. So my question, I guess, would be what we saw Sunday for the Steelers, and I guess specifically for their wide receivers like Claypool, Johnson, and Roethlisberger's performance, was that, you know, a bit of a fluke? Can we count on the Steelers at all? Maybe more opportunities for those other wide receivers? Where are you on Pittsburgh offensively?
If Ben can't get it done here, hang it up, because it's, you know, obviously, and we've already talked about it, Ben looks cooked. He did have a good game or a better game last week, but only 15 completed passes in the game, and he's missing these passes, Luke. Like 10 yards in the flat to an open receiver, and he's throwing the ball on the ground. You're like, what? You know, it's stuff he's never done before. But here comes Seattle. This second, so bad. 4 straight teams have thrown for 322 yards or more. They've allowed 3 touchdowns to Kirk Cousins and the 49ers quarterbacks in recent weeks. And a funny move. They did. They cut their previously starting cornerback, Trey Flowers. Cut him out, right? And in his place for the past 2 weeks, they've started Sidney Jones. Jones has allowed a perfect passer rating, 158.3 on his coverage. That's how bad he's been in the 2 games since he took over. They have no answers at cornerback. And so Ben should be able to get it done here. I like Ben, and I like his 2 receivers, Deontay Johnson and Chase Claypool, a lot, particularly with Juju out.
Speaking of those Seahawks, that, of course, refreshes my memory. No Russell Wilson, Geno Smith out there. So, you know, they have some playmakers on offense. What does Geno mean? Or, you know, how do you handle now Lockett, Metcalf, some of those other guys in Seattle?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked that. Great question. So, you know, DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, guys, you just started. That was it. You didn't even think about who the opponent was. You just put him in. But now here's Geno Smith. And we don't really have a book on Geno Smith because he hasn't played for 7 years. You know, he was so bad when we saw him last 2013, 2014, that, you know, if that were the version of Geno Smith, he probably wouldn't even just be on rosters right now. You know, he must have gotten better at something to just be an NFL backup. And when we saw him in that third of a game that he played last week, he looked pretty good for most of it. He ended up throwing a game-sealing interception at the end, but Tyler Lockett slipped on that play, and maybe it wasn't even on Geno Smith. We don't know for sure. But here's what I can tell you for certain, Luke. Geno Smith is not throwing the gorgeous pinpoint rainbow bombs that Russell Wilson would throw to Metcalf and Lockett. That ain't happening, because that ain't Geno Smith. I mean, Geno Smith's whole deal has been horrible accuracy throughout his time as a starter. So again, we don't totally know, and I don't think Geno Smith is going to like send this offense back to the Stone Age, but you're going to have to be smart about when you start Lockett and Metcalf, and they slump a bit here in my rankings. Right now, I've got them at 21 and 28, wide receiver 21 and wide receiver 28, respectively, for Metcalf and Lockett, which are low water marks for both of them this year.
On the subject of wide receivers, should Adam Thielen owners be concerned right now with how the last couple of weeks have gone?
Yeah, another really good topic. So the Vikings, for no apparent reason, they got this new offensive coordinator, Clint Kubiak. And that's Gary Kubiak's kid. And, you know, for Clint, who's now called six NFL games, for whatever reason, he won't let the Vikings throw downfield. And they rank 31st in pass attempts of longer than 20 yards. And here's Kirk Cousins, one of the best downfield passers there is, and Adam Thielen is one of the best guys at separation downfield. And because they're not passing downfield, it's turned Adam Thielen into a touchdown-dependent wide receiver, which you don't see very much of. But that's just the reality with Thielen now, is if he doesn't score, you don't get a lot out of him. And that's really unfortunate. And I can't give you a reason why that might change this week against a shockingly competent Carolina secondary that's been giving up just 128 yards to opposing receivers per game. That's fourth fewest. And so I'm nervous here. And by the way, I know there's a lot of Panthers fans listening. Thielen's got a foot injury. Justin Jefferson's got an ankle injury. I mean, both those guys may come into this game hobbled. I think they both play, but that's not necessarily a good sign either.
No, which leads me right to my next question, focusing on that game. Dalvin Cook on one side, Christian McCaffrey on the other. I know Matt Rhule said McCaffrey's 50-50, so I guess we'll find out Sunday, but for both those guys, whether they play or not, if they are out there, how do you handle them for this weekend?
Yeah, great question. I do believe Cook plays, so I'll start there. This is a far bigger game for Minnesota than it is for Carolina. You know, for the Vikings, this is the difference between heading into their bye week at 2-4 or 500. And that's a big psychological difference and even mathematical difference. And, you know, this is we've only seen one back get more than 10 carries against the Panthers, and that was Zeke, and he blew through that squad, 143 yards and a touchdown. You know, Dalvin Cook in his two healthy games had 21 carries per game. So I think a volume back can get it done against this team. I still like Cook here. Christian McCaffrey, I don't know if they're just playing mind games with this, but the one thing you can say based on what we saw with Christian McCaffrey last year is they won't play him if he's not near 100%. And so if he starts, I think at that point you can assume he's really in good shape and you go ahead and play him like you would normally start Christian McCaffrey without any thoughts. So I like that part about how the Panthers do business, that they don't want to put him on the field if he's not close to right.
Before we let you go, I do have to ask you about this. Paul Charchian on Twitter, at Paul Charchian. Check out GuillotineLeagues.com. I saw you talking about the bipocalypse for next week on Twitter. Is this something that fantasy owners should already start looking ahead to or planning for?
Yeah, because it's going to be – everybody's going to be running for the same juicy matchups next week when they realize they've got all these bye week problems. Buffalo, Dallas, Jacksonville, the Chargers, Vikings, and Steelers all on bye. I mean, there's some great, great offenses in there. And to have them all on bye at the same time means everybody's going to be scrambling for some of the easier matchups that are available next week. As an example, Matt Ryan, widely available, he's going to play Miami. That's a positive matchup. Go get next week's fill-ins this week, 1 week ahead before everybody else is battling for those same guys next week.
Yep, time to start paying attention to those bye weeks and making the adjustments to the rosters. He's Paul Charchian on Twitter, at Paul Charchian. Check out GuillotineLeagues.com. I may have been chopped last week, but you can still get into a league today.
Yep.
Join a Guillotine League.
Still forming leagues, you bet. It's people want to keep playing, so we'll keep making new leagues.
Absolutely. It's a lot of fun. Check it out, GuillotineLeagues.com. Charchian's free player rankings are there as well. Paul, appreciate it as always. We'll talk with you next week.
Bye, Luke.
All right, that's Paul Charchian, the best in fantasy football. Appreciate him joining us every week on Twitter, at Paul Charchian, and also online, GuillotineLeagues.com. Join a Guillotine League. I detailed you my struggles heading into the Monday Night Football game, and I just barely got chopped. I was out Calvin Ridley. I think I said Calvin Ridley earlier, right? I may have said Julio Jones. I think I said Calvin Ridley. I was out Calvin Ridley and Dalvin Cook both missed for me. and that cost me. I lost by like 2 points, and it was Latavius Murray in Monday Night Football, and I was looking good. I was leading until about halftime. He needed a certain number of points from Latavius, and Murray really didn't do much, and I'm sitting there at half thinking like, okay, we're doing pretty good. I'm holding this off, and then he beat me by 2 or 3 points. If I just had one of those guys, Cook or Ridley, they screwed me. But check out GuillotineLeagues.com. It's a lot of fun. Lowest scoring team gets chopped. They get kicked out of the league, and their players become available on the waiver wire to bid on each and every week. I made it to week 5. Not bad. I don't want to be the first guy out. I've been saying that all year. That's embarrassing. You don't want to be the first. Even the second, that's a little too early. I made it 5 weeks. That's solid. I had a good team. But no more. Everyone else gets to reap the benefits now. Coming up, we'll wrap up hour two next. The NFL trying to show off one of their new shiny toys. But it may be somewhat ridiculous. We'll get to that. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. The NFL trying to show off one of their new shiny toys, but hasn't really gone as planned. Get to that here in a moment. Don't forget to get your picks in. We'll catch up with Lee Sterling in about 10 minutes for his picks of the football weekend. You can still make yours. Head over to charlestonsportsradio.com today to get your picks in for our weekly pick'em contest. You have till 5 p.m. tomorrow to make your picks. The winner gets themselves a Fan Zone gift card. CharlestonSportsRadio.com to get your picks in for the football weekend. So, you may have gotten up early on Sunday, or maybe you're just up that time to begin with, to watch the Falcons and the Jets in London Sunday morning. Well, guess what? We got ourselves another London game on Sunday, and it's the Dolphins and the Jaguars. A game between two teams that are a combined 1-9. And the Dolphins are one of the bigger disappointments right now without their starting quarterback. And the Jaguars, I guess I shouldn't call them a disappointment, but they're one of the bigger embarrassments right now, second longest losing streak in NFL history with their young quarterback. And this was supposed to be a matchup of Tua versus Trevor Lawrence, and, ooh, Trevor Lawrence, first-round pick, let's send him over there and introduce him to a new country of fans. But it hasn't exactly lined up like that. No Tua on Sunday, a lousy Dolphins team, and the Jaguars are winless as well. I don't know how much the fans of London will care about Urban Meyer and Trevor Lawrence. For Urban Meyer, plenty of opportunities to go out to the bars in that area, though, I'm sure, over this weekend. Now, Trevor Lawrence, again, right, first-round pick, this is supposed to be to show him off. This is the epitome of these London games. This is game number 36, I think it is now, that have been played there. Zero have involved two winning teams. So the NFL wants to try to give interesting games, but not too interesting. They want to give them something, but not everything. They want to save their most interesting games for the normal windows and the primetime games and keep them here. But, you know, they thought, ooh, Tua against Trevor Lawrence. The Dolphins won 10 games last year. That's pretty good. Fast forward a few weeks. No, actually, it's a lousy matchup. They're 1-9. Now, Trevor Lawrence has taken a little flack because he said yesterday in the press conference while talking about it, he said, it's kind of ironic that we're going to London to play a team from Miami. And so everybody's ripping him on Twitter saying, oh, Trevor Lawrence doesn't know what irony means. And I think we all use that word incorrectly. I think Alanis Morissette in the song used it incorrectly. But isn't this kind of, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong as well. I thought this is kind of irony that two teams that are separated by a couple of hour drive have to get on a plane and go play each other on a flight, you know, 9 hours to another country. So you take two teams in Florida, separated by like 5 hours, and to play, they're just going to have to go all the way over to London and play. I mean, I know that's what Trevor Lawrence was trying to say. I don't know. I thought it made sense. Wasn't that one of the lyrics in the song? It's like playing in London when all you needed was a cross-state flight. Wasn't that what Alanis Morissette once sang in that song? in the 90s. You could get up early Sunday to watch Trevor Lawrence, the NFL trying to showcase one of their new stars for the fans in London. But these two teams, this matchup, not quite as good as they probably thought it would be at this point. 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. Let's go to the phone. Sam is with us. Sam, what's going on? How are you?
Good. How you doing, good sir?
Good. What's up?
Hey, I have a huge question for you. How did Bishop England High School do for football?
Bishop England?
Yeah, because I never been there for a long time since March because of this craziness going on.
Yeah. Bishop England, I have no idea. I'll have to get back to you. I don't know how they're doing.
Well, I just let you know, we have our class reunion coming up for our 10th year.
I see here, Bishop England, according to this website, they're 1-6. So they're not having a great season right now.
Well, I think what's been happening is they have too many injuries that's been going on.
Yeah, that could be. They just got their first win. They started the year 0-6. Yeah, man, maybe there are too many injuries. Tough year for them, unfortunately, but still some time to turn it around.
Second question they ask you, what do you think about the future of CFC basketball, who's playing in November 11th?
Yes, I think the future is bright. Now, yesterday I passed along the rankings from CBSSports.com, and of the local mid-major schools in the state, College of Charleston was the highest ranked. I think they were 253, somewhere in that neighborhood. Well, since the hire, I have been a fan of Pat Kelsey. In fact, I said if the Gamecocks were going to make a move, Kelsey would be on my list to replace Frank Martin. They obviously did not make a move this offseason, and Kelsey winds up with the College of Charleston. I think it's a great get for them. I think he'll do a really good job. And as Sam said, November 11th, college basketball will be here before you know it, in about 4 weeks. Get ready for that season. But I think the Cougars are in for a good run, a good tenure with Pat Kelsey. And a lead for him, it'll lead to bigger things moving forward. Hour 3 with Lee Sterling next here on the Mara Midday Show on ESPN Radio.